Hello, everyone. Welcome to a very special episode of Uncanny Treks. We are covering the new episode of Star Trek Strange New Worlds. It's Season 3, Episode 5, Through the Lens of Time. What is going down on Through the Lens of Time on Paramount Plus?
Well, an archaeological expedition led by Chapel and Dr. Corby into an ancient temple on Vadia 9 uncovers terrifying dimensional horrors, where a mysterious entity named the Vesda animates the clinically dead Ensign Gamble and forces the crew into a deadly escape.
Can I ask an arguably stupid question?
Sure, go right ahead.
When did they start calling the parasites the Vesda in the episode? I caught on that they were at the end, but I missed when they decided that was their name, or they found that was their name.
I don't remember who mentioned it. It does come up because it then sent me on a rabbit hole trying to figure out if they're somehow related to the Paw Wraiths and Q and every other crazy cosmic entity.
My guess is that there may be related to the Dr. Corby episode in the original series, although I don't know specifically how, and that also maybe they're related to the Spock's brain episode.
That's a possibility as well. They're just supposed to be beings that are powerful enough to scare the Gorn, so...
This is skipping way ahead, listeners, but since Matt brought it up, when we did have the confrontation between the Vesda possessing, or the parasite possessing Gamble, to make it easier, and the Gorn possessing Battelle, it seems to me that the implication of that is that the Gorn are quite an ancient species, which, and have this rivalry with the Vesda, this antagonism, and I thought that was quite interesting, right? A new dimension to the Gorn, at least I think.
They're the reptilian creatures we've always been afraid of, Bob. Have been around for...
And the idea is reptiles evolved far longer on planet Earth than mammals, so it makes sense that the Gorn might be a particularly long-lived civilization.
Gorn have been around forever. This just solidifies that we have someone on our side in case the Gorn do try to come after Earth. We can open up that Power Rangers well that they were hiding in.
It seems like that'd be a really bad strategy. I don't think they should do that.
That was one of the funnier pieces of this. When they do land on the planet, you see where it's released from. It's got that Power Rangers dumpster look to it that Rita comes out of.
Makes me like the episode less, to be honest.
Yeah. People have compared it to something in Stargate that I'm not as familiar with. It's a lot prettier than what Rita comes out of.
Matt, on this podcast, you mostly take victory laps on me. I'm very bad at predicting things, and I tend to take narratives more at face value, at least on a plot level, than you do. But I do get to take a victory lap on you, because I very correctly said that they were totally going to do a Spock, Leon, Chapel, Corby hijinks episode. Although, to be fair, this was far, far darker than any hijinks episode I could have predicted.
I don't really consider this a hijinks episode, but it's okay. I'll give you that they were going to have that double date scenario, just not your typical double date.
Double date from hell, Matt. Double date from hell.
With the scary nurse with no eyes, Bob, that does not make this a hijinks episode when you lose your eyeballs.
I think it makes it a dark hijinks.
No, this was far from that, Bob, but I'll give you your victory lap.
The basics of comedy, the most fundamental part of comedy is the Three Stooges, one of them poking the other in the eyes.
You got it there, Bob, but I don't think that's the same level of humor they were going for. There was no humor involved with this. You're trying to make me rethink the whole episode in a humorous light. I'm not doing that, Bob. It's a dark episode. There's no hijinks.
There was a lot of humor in it, even though it was a very dark episode. Yeah.
We're going to have to list what was humorous, Bob, at some point, but I don't think you could if you needed to.
Yeah, I totally could, and you're just trying to challenge me. Yeah. So the way that Spock, Chapel, Kirby, and Leon are constantly bickering on mission is humorous. The setups with Chapel and Leon pacing, trying not to pace about Spock, is humorous.
The way that they got stuck together when they were in one room and Spock and Corby were in the other room. So you got that dynamic. I get it, Bob. There was tension built up. I just don't feel the hijinks part because it was life or death. They weren't just dancing.
I understand hijinks to mean crazy adventure.
Oh.
Granted, when you say that, it means fun, light-spirited, playful.
Not you're going to lose your eyeballs.
I'm admitting that the tone, but I'm telling you that this is structurally the hijinks episode.
Bob thought this was Solo, the film or something, with his... or an Indiana Jones movie.
I I find it really offensive that you would go to Solo as an example of presumably a good or adventurous or fun movie.
I had to catch myself, Bob. I think in my brain, I was thinking Solo, Harrison Ford, Indiana Jones, one of those misfires.
That makes sense. Retracted. So to go back to the episode itself, Matt, do you think Mbinga is a good or a bad boss to work for?
I think he's a nice person. I don't think he's a good boss.
Are you just saying that because he sent the nurse, the ensign, on the mission before Gamble was ready to go on the mission?
He did that. He got them all hyped up. He made them excited. And then anybody that goes down on those missions, it's dangerous. You knew something would go down. Then when he comes back up, he ends up putting him in the brig when his eyeballs are gone. And he keeps giving him false hope that his eyes are going to grow back.
In fairness to Dr. Mbinga, I don't remember what the actual setup was before Gamble got his eyes taken and possessed by the entity, but I didn't really get the sense it was he was doing anything wrong because he was inexperienced or too enthusiastic. Last episode.
The character has built himself up being a background character so that he could have this emotional episode when his eyeballs get disappeared.
I'm pretty sure that there's a whole class at Starfleet Academy that's just dedicated towards telling you these are the horrible ways you can die on landing party missions.
So you think he knew that going down he was going to be in trouble, probably?
Everybody has to know that, right? Yeah. If the ensigns on the ship don't know that that's a real possibility, then Star Trek is a lot darker of a show than we think.
At one point, Bob, they do say that he can grow his eyeballs back. Why didn't they have this technology with Geordi LaForge?
That's an interesting question, Matt. That's an interesting question.
No, these are the questions I ask on Reddit, Bob.
They are the questions I ask on Reddit late at night. I can't remember what the language, especially in the pilot of Next Generation, that Crusher uses to Geordi, or Crusher uses to LaForge when they're talking about his blindness and they're introducing it to the viewer. I think probably you could argue that maybe what Mbinga is describing, the person needed to have functioning eyeballs to regenerate, to clone. Whereas in the conversation with Crusher and LaForge, I believe Crusher says something to LaForge about you, so you've been blind all your life. Maybe that's nonsense, but that would be my attempt to answer an explanation about what the difference is.
That's some good pseudoscience, Bob.
I'm glad I satisfied you. So, Matt, given that Mbinga keeps losing his nurses to forensic archaeology, he loses both to Dr. Corby, in a sense. Do you think, like Spock, Dr. Mbinga might be beginning to resent Dr. Corby? He might be actually beginning to hate him, in fact?
I think so, for sure. And this adds into the whole, is Mbinga a good boss? Everybody keeps leaving him for really boring stuff that I wouldn't be that interested in.
Archaeological medicine, where you can discover the secrets of immortality and explore strange new worlds. Boring.
Boring. I want pew-pew.
So, I wanted your take on this, because I honestly don't know how I feel about it. When Chapel is trying to ask La'an about Spock in the elevator, and she marks her territory while also saying that she's disinterested in the conversation, was that well done or not? I don't know.
Not, it was just not necessary. And it's just, we kind of talked about this last week.
No, I disagree that it's some form of it.
It did, but I didn't want it to happen, I think is the problem. I was hoping we were just going to go past it all and just move on. In the show, I was hoping that was just will they, won't they, La'an and Spock. But we're not going to make this a thing as a big part of the show. But apparently they wanted to keep pushing it so they could have this hijinks thing with you.
Well, it seems they're setting it up for Spock to get his heart broken again.
How many hearts do Vulcans have? Just one?
I should know, but I don't know. I'm going to say one, but maybe it's two. I'm sure at some point they've said it's two.
Bobby's going to break both his hearts.
When Gamble hugs Mbinga because he gets to go on the landing party, did you assume he was dead in just that instant?
Oh, hell yeah. But part of me, though, thought he might be safe because of the log entry at the beginning of the episode. If they're doing that, you figure you're going to have something at the end of the episode. Oh, my first mission was great. I learned this and that.
It was interesting, on the one hand, how much this episode conformed to the plot archetype of the disposable red shirt from the original series. But on the other hand, because they had invested so much in Gamble, and not that much, but relatively so much in Gamble in the prior couple of episodes, and also more or less made it his point of view for the first part of this episode, that made it somewhat surprising and somewhat subverts their following of the red shirt trope from the original series.
Have you read the novel Red Shirts?
Yeah, it's terrible.
Okay, yeah, I picked it up and read the first two chapters and just got ant with it, and I don't think I'll enjoy it. But it was a little too cheesy for me. It's too on the nose.
You don't know cheese until you've read the end of a John Scalzi novel. John Scalzi is a terrible. John Scalzi's enough of an internet addict that there's probably a 1 in 20, 1 in 10 chance he's listening to this. Fuck you, John Scalzi. You suck at writing. Delete yourself.
Damn. I may just have to tag him, Bob, just so you can hear this. Give him this inferiority. Feed that inferiority complex.
You have depression and you deserve. God, I hate John Scalzi. Sorry, I try to be a friendly guy and then you bring up that novel.
Well, Bob, friend is a relative term, you know.
I did like Spock dismissing Chapel's attempt to be, you and my boyfriend are great.
You and Indiana Jones really like each other.
So, Matt, to go from me raging about inconsequential nerd stuff to me excited about inconsequential nerd stuff, in the conference room, did you notice the map of Federation, Klingon, and Gorn space?
It was all mapped out. You had the Federation on the left, the Klingon on the right, and Gorn was in the lower right-hand corner.
We had not seen that map on the show before, right?
Okay, no, that's okay. About it.
There was a map floating around. It was much more detailed, at least in the sense that it had many more powers on it. And it was a map of what the known space looked like in the late DS9 era. But there was a map floating around the internet at some point in the late 90s or the early aughts that the Federation, the Klingon, the Romulans, the Tholians, the Cardassians, etc., right? Did you ever see that one? It looked pretty similar with the colored circles.
I remember downloading on like AOL back in the day.
I thought you would, but I wasn't sure. So I assumed that was the inspiration.
It did look a lot like that map. And it also, we had that sector map from some Star Trek collection. It was black and white.
The fold-out map?
Correct, yes.
I got that out of one of those magazines they published for Star Trek's 35th anniversary.
I had that hung up in my room at one point.
A commemorative magazine that I think had a gold border. One quick question. The map we're talking about that's the inspiration for this map with all the colors and circles and all the different alien powers. Do you remember what that was actually from? You just remember me generically downloading it. You don't remember a soul.
I just generically downloaded it. I don't think it was anything official.
That seems the most likely explanation. I just couldn't remember if it had any video game or role-playing game source or anything.
Oh, no, I don't think so. But if there was one, it would have come from those games. It's just too bad I pirated a lot of that stuff, so I don't know.
So, Matt, when we first get the camera glitch on Ortegas' brother's documentary camera, did you immediately assume that that was some sort of temporal or dimensional anomaly?
The idea that the camera follows emotions of people.
In the conference room scene, I can't remember if it was Pike talking or someone else, but it was presented like a normal scene, and then there was a sort of glitch or a pause. He'll shut the camera to ask them to say it again.
The only thing that stuck out with the camera was when he was explaining it to Uhura and how it follows their emotions, which to me is going to be like the next level of AI and reality TV. Where the camera just floats around and follows the interesting stuff.
I'm glad you caught that. I didn't catch that.
Based on what pheromones are floating out there, we'll zoom in on that. What's going on there? Let's see what people want to see.
Can't this documentary camera give me some space?
It's pretty creepy in a way.
It is funny that this episode is so much a commentary on original series. Obviously every episode of this is a commentary on the original series, Star Trek, but this more than most. And then it's also a little bit of a commentary on the documentary horror genre or the found footage horror genre, too. Well, Matt, were you amused that Pelia is even thirstier for Ortegas' brother than Uhura?
She's also just trying to ham it up for the camera because she remembers all those times from the golden age of cinema.
I really did enjoy the cut from Chapel. We're going to need a bigger landing party when they unveil the structure and then we have the opening credits. And then we cut to Spock and Leon very grumpily having joined the away team, but no one else. I thought that was great.
There's your hijinks right there, Bob.
That is hijinks, man. That is hijinks. So, Matt, are you interested in rewatching the TOS episode with Roger Corby? It really seems like they're investing in Corby Chapel for this season. Maybe I'm wrong.
So
it seems like they're investing in it.
Is Roger Corby just a treasure hunter, or is he like a legit architect or an archaeologist?
He's a legitimate archaeologist, but he's too ruthless or too aggressive in his pursuit of immortality and the truth, perhaps.
I'll give it a shot, but we'll watch it because he'll be in a couple more episodes.
I did like how this episode somewhat dramatizes that there's a conflict between how Starfleet approaches stuff and how an independent scientist or an independent archaeologist would approach things. It's even a little sad that they have to abandon that to just get to the actual drama of the horror plot. But I like that tension between science and Starfleet.
Well, I was appreciative of it. I did feel like Corby's character sort of shifts. Maybe it was more throughout, but towards the end, it shifts more to where he's just the bad guy in an Indiana Jones movie and just wanting the treasure. Especially when he turns around and looks back at it.
Yeah.
I could grab that real quick. No, don't do it. Replace it with a sack of beans and no one will ever know.
Get the treasure at all costs. Matt, when the ruins locked down, did you immediately think of the movie Cube?
Yeah, I did. And also, completely throwing this out there. When I first saw the little dude on the ground that had been there before, I thought it was a Borg. So
funny.
So yeah, the idea that you're talking about the film The Cube, and then there's a Borg on the ground.
That's funny. Just to keep going on observations of Pike as the emotional support captain, him patting Gamble's leg after he lost his eyes and him comforting Binga is pretty good. I like emotional support, Pike.
You don't have any eyes, but you're going to be okay.
Hey, man, Pike knows what's appropriate and what's not appropriate.
Put that man in the...
By the point they put him in the brig, it's very clear that...
I agree, and it was the smartest move, but man, it just seems Gamble was a goner at that point.
It's very funny that on this landing party, we have three women, Uhura, we have La'an, and we have Chapel. And then between this timeline and in the JJ movie timeline, Spock has dated all three.
Well, yeah, Spock gets around, bub.
Spock is a hoe, Matt.
That's
all we can say. He's a hoe.
Every universe.
The fact that we have Mbinga occupied with his blind and possessed nurse and that we have La'an and Spock and Chapel on the landing party means we do get a pretty funny and pretty non-conventional team meeting. We also don't have number one. She's just not really in this episode, except for when she criticizes Ortegas's brother's documentary techniques, which I really like. Number one, for whatever reason, I guess Rebecca Romijn was filming X-Men or something.
She's on the bridge.
She's basically not in this episode. So
she's at the con.
We have Pike, Ortegas, Pelia, Scotty, and Sam Kirk having a team meeting. And that's a funny team. I like that as a team. It amuses me.
It's always good to see Sam Kirk again because he fits in the background so much that you forget he's there.
What is he? I forget. Is he a science officer?
Yeah, but isn't it xenobiology?
A specialist on alien life. Okay.
Correct.
Interesting. I was a little embarrassed at myself of not calling that they were going to have the Gorn react to the parasite in Gamble, right? That clearly with having Batel in the recap and then having her early in the episode getting treatment from Mbinga, having a doctor's meeting with Mbinga, that was clearly where they were going to go. I did like the confrontation. Both are possessed by alien intelligences. I like the idea that the Gorn are an ancient species.
Yeah, that someone compared the fight scene between Batel and Gamble to fighting on a CW show.
It was a little better but I see where they're coming from.
That was my reaction of the week.
To be clear, I wasn't praising the fight itself. I was praising...
The setup, which was really cool to have both possessed, basically, and... going at each other in Federation bodies and in human bodies.
I wouldn't say it was CW level bad, but I would admit that it was a weak fight scene. But if I were to try to no prize explain it, and I'm not saying I actually believe this or that the show was going for this, but if I were to no prize explain it, you could say that both the Gorn and the parasite are unaccustomed to the new bodies. And that's why the fight scene is not so smooth, right?
Maybe it'll... My friend Bub has a great theory here.
He says that.
And it actually makes a whole lot of sense. That's true, Bob. They're not used to the body, so they move like puppets.
Even though I like this episode a lot, I think it's a pretty strong episode. You're right that the fight scene, maybe not the most well-realized. You're right that the Chapel-Leon confrontation, maybe not the most well-realized. And I would say Spock's speech at the end to Chapel of, I suck, but you still got to trust me because I'm the embodiment of science. It was a good idea, but I felt like it needed another pass on the content of what he was saying.
It came out of nowhere. And it was walk on so Indiana Jones.
It wasn't even the content of, oh, walk on nothing. It was just the content of how he was arguing to Chapel.
Yeah,
that could be a little better written, I thought.
Just trust me, bro. I'm a scientist.
Oh, exactly, Matt. So were you shook when Pelia just executes the parasite?
I appreciate it because he gave her something really cool to do.
That's funny. Yeah. And I do like that, in contrast to Pelia believing that evil is real and absolutely exists, which maybe she actually believes, or maybe she's just saying for the camera.
I think that was part of the...
But I do like that Pike is a relativist. He's, oh, there's no evil. It's just things we don't understand.
You would think somebody with their girlfriend hopped up with a parasite, he would feel somewhat differently.
What Saints do the... Boat shows the Gorn as being pretty strongly just dictated by their biological urges.
Yeah.
To the extent where they had to use, what was it, the star flares to send them into hibernation.
Right.
And so in that sense, almost thinking of the Gorn as, they're almost like a natural disaster, right? There's things you can do to minimize the harm, but there's no sense in thinking of it as evil, at least.
Pike just says all that to make him feel better when he's with Batel. You're not evil, honey.
Probably one of the reasons Pike probably struggles with belief in God. Anyways, he distances himself from his preacher father. I did just want to underline again how consistently meta this show is, right? Last week we had La'an solving a mystery about the cancellation of the original series, Holodeck. Yeah. And it was also meta in the sense it was Strange New Worlds doing a Holodeck episode. In this, we have, on the one hand, it's meta about documentaries and documentary horror. On the other hand, it's meta about a particular type of original series episode. Pelia overacting for the documentary. Like you're saying, it's funny and it speaks to Pelia's character, but it's also a little bit of a way of poking at how, especially Shatner, DeForest Kelly would have a big, ridiculous monologue in the original series, right?
I'm sure Pelia watched a lot of really good TV back in the day. Probably the good seasons of Game of Thrones.
The good seasons of what was the show in the holodeck?
Ace Adventure Hour.
I can't remember if that was the name of the
show. Bob, my character of the week goes to Scotty because he uses some kind of trap to catch the creature.
What sort of trap was it, Matt?
It was a Ghostbusters trap type thing.
Matt, I did not call that Scotty and his Ghostbuster trap would be your character of the week, but then when I saw it on the notes, I was, oh, I'm an idiot for not calling it. That would be Matt. If I'd been thinking a little more, I could have just filled that in for you.
I don't think Scotty made that thing. I think it was just the one, whatever they were trapped in at the beginning of the episode.
I'm going to give it to Chris Myers as Gamble, Matt. I like Gamble in this episode. They've just been telling us how great Gamble is and not using him. They actually use him in this one. I thought that was pretty good. And I thought he did a good job being the horror movie monster as he's awakening behind Mabinga in the sick bay and menacing Mabinga. And that scene where he reaches through the brig force field to choke the guard, it's really good. And then I also thought that him threatening to take Scotty and Sam Kirk was really creepy because it was clear that he meant a couple of different things when he said take.
Yeah, so he had some good character development.
Aren't we all thirsty for Scotty and Sam Kirk? Yeah. So I really liked Gamble and the entity possessing Gamble and Chris Myers as an actor this episode. So I'll give it to some agglomeration of all of them.
Well, Bob, we heard my reaction of the week, but what was yours?
This was actually pretty representative of a lot of reaction I saw to this show on Serialized. And I just picked the one that was the most well-worded. And I wanted to get your reaction to it. The reaction was, now they're deciding to do a long arc, period. In episode 4, period. Sure. Firstly, they're wrong because it's episode 5.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah.
Although I guess maybe they're just counting the first two episodes as one episode. So they're talking about this episode. And this person and several other reviewers were complaining that, like you were saying, this feels like this is going to be something they're going to touch on a couple more times. I would say at least once, probably twice before the season's over.
Right.
Would be my guess. And people seem very cranky that they're doing it in episode 5. Nobody really spells this out, but it seems they think that that's too late to start an ongoing season plot. I guess that seems to be the implication of this and other reviewers' reviews, but I don't know. I was just mystified of why people have a problem with this and wanted to hear your thoughts on it.
I'm very confused because we've had an arc since the beginning with Batel.
That's true.
So there, and then Christine left to go to the archaeological thing in the beginning of the season.
I'm thinking that they don't mean, you're bringing up two good points, that there's the ongoing arc with Batel, and then there's the ongoing arc of like Chapel's relationship with Spock. But I think they mean that there's going to be some sort of having Chapel and Corby do creepy space archaeology, potentially with the Vesda coming back, or potentially just with them having a couple of other misadventures before. Because if I remember the timing, and granted, the show may not adhere to the timing, but if I remember the timing from the original series episode, this is the year where Corby disappears.
Oh, okay. So we'll most likely get an episode where we have something happen that explains that.
And it's confusing, but I guess he doesn't disappear because he goes to a planet and everybody knows he's there, but he goes to an out-of-the-way planet and then he's not in contact until the original series episode, at least as presented in the original series episode, which...
So I really need to go back and watch that episode because I've never seen it and get a sense of what they do there. But honestly, I don't understand what the problem is. You're halfway through a season, you're going to have some arcs that come a little later. It's not that big of a deal.
Yeah, I was mystified by that too. And I feel pretty confident that I'm interpreting them right, but you're making me question myself. Maybe they're more cranky about Spock and Chapel or Batel and Gorn. I guess the larger point to end on that I think is just interesting to think about is I think these people are coming from the perspective of they want this show to be more like Discovery or Picard, where it's a total ongoing serialized plot like everything else on television.
That's what makes it so much better, because really I could just tune into any episode and catch on to what's going on, which is how I liked Star Trek when we were younger. It was the same with like Next Generation. You could just flip on an episode and you could follow the general plot. You could do the same thing to some degree with episodes of DS9. You cannot do that with Discovery.
And I'm going to bet that Discovery and Picard and Prodigy, people are just not going to remember fondly for that reason, for other reasons too, but also just for that reason. I don't think people are going to remember it fondly, and I don't think they're going to go back to it.
Well, they're just like long movies. And it's hard to really keep up with. All I do is think about, okay, this is what happened in that season or this season, whereas... with old Trek, it's more, I can almost remember episode to episode. This happened in this episode. I can't do that at all with Discovery or Picard.
The other perspective, I think they're writing from that perspective, but I think the other perspective could be they want Strange New Worlds to be more purely episodic. On the one hand, I could respect, but on the other hand, just how realistic is that in this day and age?
Oh, yeah, you can never go back to that where each one's its own little isolated piece, unless you're doing an anthology series.
Yeah, people are welcome to their opinions, but I was mystified by this one.
Well,
you know who's not welcome to their opinions?
John Scalzi.
Oh, I didn't even look to see what the title is. I like to just be totally surprised.
Yeah, I'm always good with that, too, because I feel like it's always cool just to be like, oh, this is the Lego episode, or this is the whatever weird shit they're coming up with this week.
All right, listeners, join us next week as we cover episode 6 of Strange New Worlds, whatever it is. I bet it will probably be pretty good. And I am Bob in Cascadia. That is Matt in the Southland. Have a great night, everybody.
Thanks for listening.